Cassie McCullough with you on Life Matters on Radio National. And now to a man who's been putting forward some radical rethinking about health. On Twitter, he describes himself as a science journalist, a TV presenter, a self-experimenter, and the 5-2 guy. Now, by which he means the 5-2 diet guy, or it's also known as the fast diet, where you barely eat anything for 2 non-consecutive days and then eat whatever you like, more or less, for 5. That book has sold 1 million copies or so. Now he's got a new diet, which says we can prevent and even reverse type 2 diabetes. It's called the 8-week blood sugar diet. Dr. Michael Mosley, welcome.
Hi there.
Now, can we start by addressing some scepticism that some people, and possibly even myself, have about this, and in fact any new diet with big claims like yours? It seems that everything we've ever been told is wrong, and that starts way back at school with I remember being told to copy down the food pyramid with fat at the top and bread and rice and pasta and potatoes at the bottom. And since then, there's been endless debunkings, and each new diet has a catchy name, a splash of science, and the promise of a short time frame for success.
Yes.
Now, yours has all that.
Yes.
Can you understand the exasperation?
Oh, 100%. All I can say is that if you go to my website, thebloodsugardiet.com, what you'll find is plenty of scientific references. I've got at least 60 scientific references in the back of this book. It's also endorsed and is based on the work of Professor Roy Taylor, who is one of the most eminent diabetes experts in the UK, Europe, and indeed the world. It has also been trawled over by around 6 world experts in genetics, exercise, you name it. So it has an enormous amount of academic credibility and backing to it. So this is not something I just invented on the back of a packet of cornflakes. So there is lots of science behind it. And I think I can justify every statement that is in the book based on scientific studies that have been done over the last 5 to 10 years. So I feel very comfortable about it, but I do thoroughly understand your scepticism, but I would guess I'd like people to look at it and kind of take it apart bit by bit, because there are bits of it which are not that controversial. Because one of the things, for example, that the whole diet is based on is the Mediterranean diet. And I think almost every dietitian now and doctor would accept that the Mediterranean diet is a really healthy way to go, much more so than the low-fat diet.
Because this is some of the findings that came with what in Australia was called the CSIRO diet, which was heavy in proteins and vegetables and light on carbs, basically.
Indeed. And it's the biggest study ever done was done with just over 7,000 Spaniards, and it's called the PREDIMED trial, and it began in 2003. And they were randomly allocated to either going on a low-fat diet or on a Mediterranean diet. The low-fat group were basically told to eat low-fat dairy, lots of pasta, lots of bread, starchy foods, fill up on those, lean cuts of meat, you know, standard low-fat advice. The people on the Mediterranean side were told essentially they needed to consume lots of olive oil, nuts, fatty fish, things like that. They were allowed some dark chocolate, also a glass of red wine with the evening meal.
Ooh,
quite. This sounds like a nice diet, doesn't it? We can think, ooh, this sounds nice. And they were followed for a number of years. And what they found was the people who were on the Mediterranean diet, they had 33% less chance of having a heart attack or stroke than those who were on the low-fat diet. Women had 58% less chance of developing breast cancer. They were much less likely to have cognitive decline because they measured their memory and things like that pretty well every year for the course of the trial. I would remind you, this is a massive randomized control trial, which is the absolute gold standard of all, you know, medical trials. And they followed them for a good period of time, huge numbers of people. And if you look at that trial, you just go, the low-fat diet is dead. It just doesn't measure up. The curious thing I find is there is this sort of odd dichotomy, because if you go, for example, to the UK website, it talks about the PREDIMED trial. It says what a brilliant trial it was, why the Mediterranean diet is so great. And then it says, what is a Mediterranean diet? And it describes the low-fat diet.
Uh-huh.
The diet it describes does not have olive oil in it. It does not have nuts in it. It certainly does not have red wine or dark chocolate in it. It simply is a description of a low-fat diet. So at one level, they acknowledge this diet. And the other level, they reject it, which is weird. So the diet I describe is, its heart is a Mediterranean diet. But it's more than that, obviously, because it's also, 800 calories for 8 weeks. And that is quite a radical claim.
It's sort of reassuring to hear your frustration, because I think so many people are in that role themselves without the benefit of your scientific background. But one of the beliefs we've had drummed into us for all these years is crash diets don't work.
Yes.
But isn't that exactly what this blood sugar diet of yours is?
Well, a crash diet is technically around 200 or 300 calories a day done for a prolonged period of time. And it has a sorry history, because back in the 70s, there was a diet like this, which was called the last chance diet. And it kind of lived up to its name because some people died on it. This was not a good diet. Now, this diet is actually technically a low calorie diet. Anything between 1,500 and 800 calories is a low calorie diet. Now, the belief is that you should lose, half a kilo, maybe a kilo a week, and keep that up for a long period of time, and that is the best way to go. That is not what the studies show.
And that's not what the people in your book, experience either.
They're
losing, some of them, 8 kilos a week.
Well, not quite as much as that, but they are losing on average 15 kilos over 8 weeks. And the initial weight loss is more like sort of 3 kilos a week. And then it kind of slows down a bit.
And you say a lot of that's water.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you lose on average 14 kilos, almost all of it fat. And because Professor Taylor is doing these studies, he's able to meticulously document them. He puts them through MRI machines. He measures their body fat. This is not something I invented on the back of an envelope. As I said, this is part a proper controlled trial. And he's doing a massive trial at the moment, which is going to follow a whole group of type 2 diabetics for 3 years, and it will publish in 2018. So it will publish in 2018, and he's following them for a long period of time. It's the biggest grant ever given by Diabetes UK to a researcher. So, and that is, his work is the heart of my diet. But there is also a massive trial which is about to begin, Oxford University, 800 calories done for 8 weeks. It's basically the diet I describe. This is not for diabetics. It's basically for anyone. And it's got a big research grant behind it. And that is because the experts all go, actually, rapid weight loss is the way to go. There was a paper in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the most respected medical journal in the world, bar none. This was put together by the US's foremost weight loss specialist. It's called Myths, Facts and Presumptions About Obesity. And number one myth is that losing weight slowly is better than losing it fast. And they looked at all the studies and they concluded, actually, it's better to lose it fast. That you're in the long run, the short run, whatever run you happen to compare it with, you are more likely to keep the weight off if you do it properly. Now, there are really dreadful ways of losing weight rapidly.
Well, I was just going to say, just last week we had a coach from The Biggest Loser, the Australian edition of that worldwide format, here telling us a bit about her 12-week transformation.
Yes.
And you'll excuse me if I don't, just remark that you do sound a little evangelical about what your discoveries are.
It's not my discoveries. These are not my discoveries. They are based on scientific trials done by other experts. This is based on work of Professor Roy Taylor, Oxford University, Harvard. This is not something I made up.
I feel assured of that. But what about after that 8 weeks?
Okay, so the idea, and maybe you will continue for longer than 8 weeks, and the really critical bit is obviously what stops you putting the weight back on again. So that is a big part of the book. It is a big part of Taylor's program. How do you stop yourself doing that? And it's about changing the environment you operate in.
Diet and exercise.
Well, it's kind of like, people say to me, it's really easy to lose weight. All you need to do is eat less and do more exercise, which is true. But it's like saying the way you play golf is just hit the ball straight in the hole. Mm. It's really easy. It's both a description of the blindingly obvious. The way you win at football is by scoring more points than the other side. It is true, but it's not actually a helpful description. What you actually need to know is, what is the best way to lose weight? What is the best way to keep it off? What is the best way to do exercise which is sustainable? And that's what I'm into. Mm. I'm actually digging around in the science and asking the people who really do the research, what do you actually find?
On Life Matters, we are talking with Dr. Michael Mosley. He is the man behind that 5-2 diet book, which really took off around the world, and now a new one about our blood sugar and the way we can change it with our diet and perhaps even ward off or reverse diabetes. Now, this is where your statistics become, I have to say, very compelling. You say that 4 million people in the UK have diabetes and that the people with pre-diabetes has tripled in the past 10 years from 11 to 35% of the population. In the US, 29 million people have diabetes and many don't know it, and well over 80 million people have pre-diabetes and only 1 in 10 know it. And then in China, the figures are sort of staggering. Why is this so widespread?
I think it is because we have put on so much weight around our waist, and because the diet we eat and which we exported to the rest of the world, when I say we, I really mean the Americans, but which has been taken up. And it takes a single generation to turn what would previously be a very healthy diet into a really unhealthy diet. So China has gone from being pretty good to very bad in a single generation. Vietnam, 20 years ago, less than 1% were type 2 diabetics. Now it's 10%. They're cutting off more limbs in Vietnam because of type 2 diabetes than they were during the height of the Vietnam War.
And that is partially because of racial variations.
Absolutely. So what you get in different ethnic minorities, if you are anything other than a Caucasian, then your risks are much greater. If you are Asian, if you are an Australian Aboriginal, if you are from almost any other racial group, Afro-Caribbean, then you are likely to develop diabetes younger. You will develop it with a lower body mass index, and it will be more aggressive for reasons we do not understand. And that is the horror show that we are seeing, you know, the fruits of what we have sown in poor communities around the world. And it is a dreadful, dreadful thing. And that, I guess, is one of my motivations for writing it is, clearly, my personal motivation, I discover I'm a type 2 diabetic, I discover I can reverse it. 4 years ago, I lost 10 kilos. My blood sugar levels are normal. I talk to a lot of other people who have reversed their diabetes by losing weight. I know how bad the advice is they get from their doctors. Generally, uniformly, awful. They get given advice. And the reality is doctors are taught nothing about nutrition. When I was at medical school, we were taught nothing. My son is at medical school, he is taught nothing. We're taught about exotic disease. We're not taught about the sort of advice you should give somebody who sits in front of you. So the standard advice you'll receive is go on a low-fat diet. Now, we know low-fat diets don't work. We know they've been tried to death. It just doesn't work. But it's the standard advice that most doctors will reach for. And I also believe it is the advice you will be given by the Australian Diabetes Association. And I find that deeply, deeply puzzling because they must be as aware as I am of the research.
Okay. Now, just for people who are listening who don't understand diabetes and the two different types,
yes,
can you briefly describe that and how it works, particularly type 2?
Absolutely. There are actually several types of diabetes. There's type 1, which is essentially an autoimmune disease. It affects people who are children or, you know, young adults, generally speaking, but that also has been on the rise for reasons we don't understand. Then there is type 2, which is strongly associated with central obesity. It's basically the fat you put on around your tummy, visceral fat, fat which penetrates your liver and your pancreas. That seems to be driving it. Then there is gestational diabetes, which is what happens to women when they get pregnant, which is much more strongly associated with hormones. But we also know that the blood sugar levels of the mother will affect the fetus and will predict the weight of the baby at 2 years, 4 years, 10 years, 12 years, 16 years. You are programming your child, if you have high blood sugar levels, for a life of obesity and probably of diabetes.
And for the mother, the diabetic condition doesn't necessarily go away after the pregnancy.
It does resolve in many cases, but you are at much greater risk of subsequently developing type 2 diabetes.
Okay, so type 2 diabetes, yes, works by a lot of sugar being in the blood.
Okay, so what essentially happens is that your muscles, first of all, develop what's called insulin resistance, possibly because you haven't been doing a lot of activity, you're putting on weight, you get fat infiltrating the muscles, and you get they are unable to respond to the insulin signals. Insulin basically is a hormone produced by your pancreas, and what it does is it takes the sugar and the fat out of your blood, if you like, and it sticks it in places like muscle where it provides fuel. The trouble is, once you become insulin resistant, your body is no longer able to process that and get rid of that sugar and that fat so readily. And you start to also develop insulin resistance in your liver and other parts of your body, also your brain. So what happens is your body has to pump up ever higher levels of insulin to, you know, get your blood sugar levels down, because sugar is toxic. Sugar in your blood is really, really bad for the blood vessels. What it does is it kind of binds to the surface and it causes a process called glycation. And that's why it causes so many horror shows. So that's why it leads to blindness, impotence, kidney failure, liver failure, you name it. All of them massively raised in type 2 diabetics.
There are also the symptoms of dementia.
Yes, doubled. Heart disease, doubled, quadrupled maybe, dementia, doubled. Type 2 diabetes in Australia, number one cause of preventable blindness, number one cause of impotence, number one cause of kidney failure, currently number one cause of liver transplants and amputation. I don't know the figures in Australia, but in the UK, 70,000 amputations done every year at a cost of $120,000 a pop. Because of type 2 diabetes, and many of them will die within a year of the operation.
Now, I don't want people to be afraid listening to this. So, and everyone will be diagnosing.
Yes,
will be diagnosing themselves.
It's very difficult, isn't it, to get the balance, because the problem is that a lot of people go along to their doctor. Their doctor wants to be reassuring, so their doctor might tell them they are a type 2 diabetic, but the medicines will sort all this out, and so don't worry. They should be worried, though, because type 2 diabetes is a serious illness. And the problem is, we know that once you start on the medication, your progression is not inevitable, but frequently leads you to insulin. And many of the anti-diabetes drugs you take will make you fatter. So you are not treating the underlying condition. The underlying condition is you have fat in your liver and your pancreas, which is stopping your body producing, you know, reacting efficiently to the blood glucose in your body. So that is the problem, and that's what you need to get rid of. And yet that's not what the drugs are doing. The drugs are simply pumping sugar out of your system. You know, my wife's a GP. She sees drug companies all the time coming with new fancy drugs, and all they do is they enable you to go on eating just as you are eating now, and you just urinate sugar. And you do so at a cost to the NHS of around $25 billion a year. That's the cost.
In the UK.
In Australia, it is $15 billion. $15 billion is roughly the cost of type 2 diabetes.
This can affect people who don't outwardly look unwell.
Yes.
And who aren't obese in any way.
Absolutely. I wasn't. I was thin on the outside, fat inside. And I was a normal weight. I was actually a healthy weight, BMI of 24. And you wouldn't have looked at me and said, there's anything wrong with you. I had, obviously, my father was a type 2 diabetic, and that's a risk factor. But I certainly didn't think I was at risk. It was picked up by a random blood test. I had an MRI just because I was making a program. That's not a normal part of the procedure, although you can have a thing called a DEXA scan, which is a much cheaper way, and it'll show you your level of internal body fat. And that's when I discovered loads and loads of this white stuff infiltrating my liver and my pancreas. And what Professor Roy Taylor up in Newcastle, who, as I said, is my guru in all this, he puts people on the 800-calorie diet, and what he shows is that the liver just drains of fat within days or weeks. You start to see this happen within 3 or 4 days of going on an 800-calorie diet. Because the good thing about visceral fat is that it's pretty well the first stuff to go.
We're talking with Michael Mosley, and you mentioned just then your documentaries. You've been making science and health-related documentaries for the BBC for 30 years. Are you often asked about that position of privilege, that you have that platform that the BBC has enabled you to have, to sell these books about diets, or do you feel differently?
It's tricky, obviously, because the fast diet emerged out of a Horizon documentary I made, which was called Eat Fast, Live Longer. Now, the documentary went out. I actually had no intention of writing a diet book. I'd never written a diet book before that. And in fact, I ended up writing it about 6 months later, when about 15 copycat books had already come out, most of them writing absolute garbage. So I was approached by a Times journalist and she said, look, if you don't do it, nobody is actually going to learn anything that is actually correct. So I produced the book and obviously that did incredibly well. And, you know, I made money out of it and hurrah, I was happy. Now, the current book is nothing to do with the BBC. It is not based on a documentary. It is not endorsed by the BBC. They have nothing to do with it. So they obviously aware that I've written it. They are comfortable because it has experts crawling all over it. It is endorsed by some of the world's leading experts and a whole range of things. So they are obviously understandably and rightly anxious about one of their, you know, presenters being associated with something which you might deem dodgy, you know. And I'm extremely careful about anything I write or say. I feel comfortable with doing this. The first documentary I ever made was about a guy called Barry Marshall, you might have heard about. This was an Australian, the only guy from Western Australia who has ever won Nobel Prize. I was going to say Peace Prize. No, he's the only guy from Western Australia, born in Western Australia, ever to win the Nobel Prize. And I made a film with him 26 years ago. And the current situation with diabetes reminds me very much of that situation.
He was researching on stomach ulcers.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And at the time, stomach ulcers were essentially seen as the fault of the patient. They were stressed, they were eating badly. This was an irreversible disease that could only be managed by drugs. Zantac, best-selling drug of all time. And then Barry comes along and says, that's not true. It's actually caused by something much simpler than that. It's by a previously unknown organism called Helicobacter pylori, which I've discovered with Robin Warren, a pathologist. And obviously everyone went, this is nonsense. Who is this non-entity in Western Australia telling us that our last 20 years of research has been a complete waste of time? So Barry went off and he actually grew up the bacteria, swallowed it, and induced the beginnings of an ulcer in himself. So I thought that was just the world's most fabulous story. And I went off and made a documentary with him, which went out on the BBC. And I got a lot of vitriol from doctors. We had a review in the British Medical Journal going one-sided and tendentious. And yet Barry and Robin went on to win the Nobel Prize because he was absolutely right.
Yes, it was one of the fantastic discoveries and no doubt encouraged you into self-experimentation.
Oh, that's exactly where my career, because I became obsessed by self-experimentation. I discovered that I badly wanted to do a series on the history of medicine told through self-experimenters. I pitched the idea to every controller of every channel for 15 years with them going, no, 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 until I eventually got in front to one and she said yes, and then she said, who's going to present it? And I said, I have no idea, because at the time I was an executive producer, I was behind the camera. And she said, why don't you do it? And that's how I ended up being a television presenter, you know, which was something I would never have expected, never wanted, but I've actually quite enjoyed doing.
And you're very good at it. So really what we're seeing here is we are living through a period where we are not keeping up with science. What we understand about what we eat and what we do is changing a lot. And at the same time, we have the greatest levels of obesity. We have these incredible figures about diabetes type 2 around the world. And you're saying there's a disconnect between us and the medical system and that information.
There is a massive disconnect, and I think that's what's leading to this horror show in the end. I think there is an awful lot of information out there, but for whatever reasons, it is not being incorporated into the mainstream. Now, I do understand conservatism, and as I said, I can understand why they rejected Barry. You know, he had a body of work. If you actually looked at it, you'd have been convinced, but frankly, what happens is most experts don't have time. They think this is nonsense. They've been there for 20 years. Why should they bother? And I fear that's kind of where we are to some extent with the obesity dilemma. We are still hooked on the idea of a low-fat diet because it's the most convenient thing to fall back on. The really encouraging thing is that people now begin to realize that sugar is not a great idea. You know, I don't blame everything on sugar. Sugar is not the great devil, but there is something really interesting around this whole idea of insulin, insulin resistance. There is a big body of evidence which is building up, which is saying, actually, our advice has been fundamentally flawed. And I just love the PrettyMed study because, as I said, the evidence for the benefits of a Mediterranean-style diet appear to me to be utterly overwhelming. And yet I find it curious that the principal bodies do not yet endorse it, or at least they endorse a version of it which bears no resemblance to the actual studies. So there's part of me which is wildly optimistic and goes, we are about to change and it's all going to be better, and there's part of me which is deeply pessimistic, because we're also up against huge vested interests. We know that the only foods that get massively subsidised are things like corn, the things that make us fat. We do not subsidise spinach, we do not subsidise broccoli or anything that's actually healthy. We just subsidise the unhealthy stuff. You have the sugar lobby who are doing exactly what the tobacco lobby did. They know they are going to lose, but they just want to delay it because they've got a lot of money to make. And they're going to lose in Australia, going to lose in the States, but they're going to go pump it out in Mexico, China, the Middle East, places like Dubai where they're just drinking Coca-Cola and Fanta like there's no tomorrow. And they already have 25% of population diabetic. So they have a big market out there, and they're not going to give it up without a fight. So there is a lot of that, and then within the medical profession there is massive inertia. I'm very happy to be challenged on anything I have said or claimed. I love discussion, debate. It's highly likely that a lot of what I've said will turn out not to be true in 20 years' time. But at the moment, the best knowledge that I have, the studies that I have seen, based on the best authorities I can lay my hands on, that forms the content of this book, and I feel very, very comfortable with what I say in it.
Dr. Michael Mosley, you make a compelling argument. Thanks for putting it to us today.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Michael Mosley. The 8-Week Blood Sugar Diet is the name of his book, and no doubt you will have seen him out and about around during his visit to Australia.